Integral Jewish Meditation, Part 1, Offering, Portal of the Heart. Kavana. Once, a great metallurgist trained an apprentice in all the complexities of the craft. When the training was finished, however, the apprentice was unable to do even the simplest of tasks. Then the master realized the apprentice had learned everything except the first and most important thing, how to light the fire. In metallurgy, you can't begin the work of refining the metals without first lighting the fire. Similarly, if you want to awaken, you also need a fire. This essential fire, without which spirituality is useless and even potentially dangerous, is the right intention. As we know from history as well as current events, violence often comes in the name of religion. The essence of the problem is not religion itself, but the intention that is brought to it. So what is right intention? First, it is important to understand that right intention, or kavana, is not something different from the kind of intention that arises naturally when you're spiritually awake. Right intention is awakened intention. So then how can you begin with an awakened intention if you're not yet awake? It seems like a contradiction. In order to understand the answer, let's take the example of lifting weights. You lift weights in order to build physical strength. However, you cannot begin to lift weights unless you have at least a little physical strength to begin with. With your little bit of strength, you can lift a small weight. Through lifting something light, you build strength and you can move on to heavier weights. Over time, you get stronger and stronger. It's the same with any endeavor. If you want to learn to play an instrument, you must first be able to move your hands on the instrument in a simple way. To learn something intellectual, you must have a mind that can think to some degree. Whatever you seek to develop, you have to have a little ability to start with, or you can't even begin. With spirituality, it's exactly the same. The ability to live from awakened intention comes from the fact that you already have awakened intention. You just need to remember it and choose it. But to do this, you need to have a grasp of what it is. You need to experience it within yourself so that you can bring it forth. Let's begin to get a sense of right intention by exploring what the early sages had to say about it. Contemplation for its own sake. The ancient rabbis thought intention to be so important that it's among the first subjects in the classic wisdom text Pirkei Avot, Chapters of the Sages. In the third Mishnah, the sage Antigonus says, "Don't be like the attendant who serves the Rav to receive a reward. Rather, be like the attendant who serves the Rav not to receive a reward." In other words, you should serve for its own sake, not for some future result. But how is this possible? Why would you serve as an attendant to someone unless you were going to get paid for your efforts? Let's look at a hypothetical example to get a sense of what it means to serve for its own sake. Suppose you saw a baby crawl over to an open hot oven. What would you do? Probably you would leap up to save the baby from getting burned. I imagine that's what I would do. Now, if we look at this situation, what do we find? First, there's the quality of immediacy. There's no decision-making process. The instant you perceive the situation, you know what you must do. There's no choice. When I say there's no choice, I don't mean that there's no free will. Of course, theoretically, you could choose not to help the baby. What I mean is that there would likely be no consideration of choice, no sense of, what should I do now? Just the situation and the immediate response. So we might say that the situation commands the response, and that actually the situation and the response are not separate at all. One leads to the other with no space for me to consider what to do. The second quality we find is that there's no conflict between my interests and the baby's interests. The act is one of total service, but without any sense of, I am doing something to serve. If someone came up to you afterward and said, you saved the baby, what a heroic, saintly person you are, that would be embarrassing, right? There's nothing saintly about it. There was no choice, no sense of sacrifice. There was just doing the obvious, without thought. Finally, in the moments after preventing the baby from getting burned, I imagine there would be a sense of gratitude and relief. Thank God the baby is safe! After that, of course, there would probably be a host of other things. Who left the hot oven door open with an unattended baby crawling around? The me would return with its judgments, opinions, and commentary. But before that, just thank God for the blessing of helping the baby. Now we can begin to see what Antigonus meant. Saving the baby is its own reward, aimed not at the future, but at the present. In Hebrew, this is called doing something lishma, for its own sake. Practice. When we begin a spiritual practice, we're often motivated by trying to achieve a certain kind of state. Perhaps we want less stress, or a feeling of bliss, an experience of the divine, or any number of things. These are all totally valid motivations, but the problem is they're all rooted in the experience of me wanting to get something. But as we've seen, awakened intention isn't like that. Rather, it springs from your connection with the moment. It's not about achieving something or getting somewhere. It's simply an expression of your own inherent goodness for its own sake. In other words, it is an act of love. In beginning meditation, or anything for that matter, it is helpful to first evoke this basic kavanah so that your intention isn't contradicting your goal. Again, this is not difficult, as love is an essential part of your own being. Take a moment now to connect with this simple quality. Place your right hand on your heart and take the attitude of offering your presence to this moment just as it is. Give your attention as a gift to whatever is arising in your field of awareness. Sounds, sensations, feelings, whatever's present. Notice that all the elements of your experience right now are part of one experience, and that this is how reality is appearing to you. As you offer yourself, try expressing this verbally with the words, for you. Can you feel a shift when you do that? Now, let's try using the Hebrew word that means for you, lecha. This word comes from a scriptural prayer that begins, lecha Hashem HaGadula. For you, O God, are the greatness. Chronicles 29:11. In Kabbalah, the word gedula, or greatness, refers to chesed, the great divine quality of loving kindness. So when we chant lecha, we offer our presence lovingly to the divine, to reality, to the present moment, all basically meaning the same thing. But, you might be wondering, how are the divine and reality and the present moment the same thing? For many people, the word divine or God means a supreme entity, the God of the Bible stories. But the esoteric or inner tradition teaches differently. As the Zohar puts it, woe to those who say that the Torah contains no more than stories. They're looking at the outer garment and no more. The most sacred Hebrew name of God consists of three Hebrew letters, Yud, He, and Vav, with the He repeated at the end. These letters come from the Hebrew verb to be, so the inner meaning of the divine name is actually existence, being, or reality. This name is considered so sacred that traditionally it is forbidden to pronounce the name, or even to pronounce the names of the letters consecutively. This also hints at its inner meaning. Reality cannot be grasped by words or ideas, and yet here it is. So on this inner level, God is not an entity or a character in a story. God is reality itself. God does not merely exist. God is existence. And right now, there's nothing but God. Everything you perceive, everything you feel, everything you think, and your consciousness itself is nothing but God. And your access point to God, of course, is always this moment. But, you may ask, if the divine name actually means being or existence, why use the word God at all? Why not just say being or existence? Why confuse the issue with a word that implies belief in some kind of divine person? The answer is that God is a relational word. When we call someone a friend, mother, or daughter, we are describing a relationship. A person is a friend or mother only in relation to another person. It is the same with God. The word God describes something that is supreme, ultimate, above and beyond oneself. Ordinarily, the mind tends to make its own ideas into gods. That is, we give supreme importance to our own thoughts, mistaking our ideas about reality for reality. We elevate an image of the truth above the truth. We do this not because we are idolatrous sinners, but because that is how the mind works. The main function of the mind is to navigate the next moment. Without the mind's constant envisioning of the future through its memories of the past, we would not know what to do or even remember how to speak. Without past and future, we could not think at all. Thought and time are interdependent and inseparable. The price we pay for the constant movement of the mind, however, is that the present moment becomes insignificant. The past and future, which really means our own thoughts about the past and future, become our ultimate concern. But important as thoughts are, their content is not real. It is only an image of the real. It is the map, not the territory. It is the menu, not the food. Reality is always already here. Only the present moment actually exists. But to enter the present, we must cease giving so much importance to the activity of thought and open to reality as it is. Can you remember a time when you were so filled with awe that the present moment filled you entirely? Perhaps it was a moment of witnessing something awesome in nature, or perhaps it was being in the presence of someone for whom you had great respect or love. In such moments, there's a sense of arrival, a sense of fulfillment, a sense of, this is it. The dominance of time and thought temporarily subsides, and you enter the fullness of the present. And yet, it is always this moment in which we encounter the real, not just the occasional extraordinary moments. This, then, is the reason for using the word God. By calling reality God, we bow to what is, prayerfully opening to reality as the one living presence that is always present. Let's try the practice again, invoking this attitude of prayerfulness with the word Lecha. Place your right hand on your heart, imagining a light shining from your heart center. Offer yourself, your attention and presence, lovingly to this moment, to existence as this moment. Take a nice deep in-breath and chant Lecha with a long out-breath. Lecha. This practice of simply opening to this moment as it is, offering your attention as a gift from the heart, is the beginning of meditation. In the example mentioned above of saving the baby, the situation itself has the power to bring you into the present. You wouldn't be daydreaming or thinking of something else while leaping up to save the baby. The situation itself commands your attention. But the power of attentiveness is always already within you. Evoke this intention of attention, and you can awaken at any moment into the fullness of this moment. With practice, this open quality of loving kindness, of chesed, is gradually uncovered as your natural state. The classic Hasidic text by Rabbi Schneur Zalman called the Tanya talks about this through a different extraordinary example, that of Jewish martyrdom. The author points out that throughout Jewish history, even the most unspiritual individuals were willing to suffer martyrdom rather than betray their people and sense of what is right. The reason, says the Tanya, is that it often takes an extraordinary situation to awaken this potential. But if we know this, we can choose to awaken it within ourselves, even without an extraordinary situation. Right now, in this moment, the baby is reaching for the hot oven. The baby actually is this moment. Your task is to rescue it from being burned by an imaginary past and future, or by a noisy mind, or the many other ways we become disconnected from the openness and wisdom of our own hearts. This moment is asking something of you, but you can only truly respond if you're present, if you open yourself to it. When should you open yourself to it? The answer, of course, is now. The time for practice is always this moment, in every moment that you are able. However, if you take this invitation to practice constantly, you will probably notice that it's not so easy. At some point, something will come along, a thought, a feeling, a memory, an experience, or even just tiredness that will topple you from this high place. If right intention is so natural and simple, why is it so difficult to maintain? There appears to be a counterforce, an opposite tendency that is also operating. So if we are to practice right intention, we need to understand the source of wrong intention. That source is sometimes called ego.